Now, 2026 is designated International Year of the Woman Farmer by the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. With 18 months to go, are we ready? Women grow up on farms, they live on farms, they work on farms. But what is stopping them being the farmer? Most Irish farms are family farms and the farm is handed down from one generation to the next. Traditionally, the eldest boy would take over the farm, but it doesn't always work out like that. As I discovered when I visited Ashley Fennell on the Carlow-Kildare border, who's converted the family sheep and suckler farm to a dairy operation in recent years.
Can I just say, Ashley, you walk very fast.
Sorry. It's the long steps. Long legs, big steps, yeah.
Yeah, how tall are you?
5'11".
There you go.
Yeah. The first year I went dairying, I held on to 40 of my favourite sheep.
I see you've goats there.
The field beside the house, yeah. So we have pygmy goats as well. The joy I still get lambing those few yos is just, it's sad. I remember, and I'm the very same, my granny years ago, and the first lambs that hit the ground, she'd be out to the shed to see them, and she'd pick the lamb up and she'd smell it, like, oh, yeah. And I'm the same, just, you can't explain it, sheep farmers will know exactly what I'm talking about.
So what age did you start actually running this farm?
We were four kids in the family, and my father was diagnosed with cancer in 2007. He was only 45 when he was diagnosed, and he was 46 when he passed away, yeah. So I was 19, I think. It can go two ways, because when someone passes away, you know, all of a sudden you have a farm. You have animals on the farm. The farm has to continue. Someone has to do the work. That, you know, you can't just throw it there and say, look, I'm not in form for it today. And that was initially a burden, particularly on my mother. You know, like, this had to be dealt with because my dad was the farmer. It was very much, we couldn't escape it. I found it very therapeutic. And I know some of the others did, the siblings that didn't intend to stick around or weren't interested in farming. But yet if they came home, they were gone walking across the fields. There was so much memories attached to this place.
How did it happen that you were the one who has the farm and is farming?
I was definitely out farming growing up with my dad the most, right? I had the love for it. And anyone that would know us would have said that. And he used to say, like, go get yourself a nice job. Farming is not for women. That was my dad. And not in the really old-fashioned sense, but in the way of, like, he'd be looking out for you. There's easier ways, you know, that you can live. And he saw, this is a dry farm. It burns up easy. He saw he went through that year after year. And he sort of said, look, there's easier ways. Go and do something else. But when you love it, you love it. But look, I had applied to the CAO to do biomedical science in DIT. When he was unwell and I was doing my leaving cert. And that's, you know, I deferred it for a year, picked Carlow IT after that to go and do it because it was local. And, my father had passed more suddenly than anyone had expected. And suddenly, you know, there was a farm to care for. And it just grew from there, bit by bit, you know.
I don't mean to pry too much, but when your dad was unwell,
yeah.
I knew that, you know, probably coming towards the end, yeah. In a way, did he know that you were there for the farm? Or did he think it was going to go to one of the other, the boys or whatever in the family?
I don't know. And people have said since, you know, since I've gone dairying and I'm here full time and, you know, the place is radically different in the 16 years since he passed. People say, oh, you know, your dad would be so proud. I don't know. Like, I'm sure he would. But, you know, as I said, he would have preferred if I went and got myself a job that was easier on me, I suppose. You know what I mean? I mightn't be as happy, but that was his concern. So it was a concern for me. So I don't know. And I know, like, the youngest boy in the family, Scott, he got married recently, actually. He is farming on a smaller scale, part-time himself. But my dad definitely tried to persuade him that livestock were the way forward, whereas, unfortunately for Scott, kind of, he preferred four wheels than four legs, you know?
The mechanics and that,
and he's gifted in what he does, but, like, definitely, yeah, ideally, I think I could see my dad was, like, you know, trying to persuade him that, yeah, this is a great way of life, but, like, you like what you like, you know? My other two siblings had no interest, absolutely none, and they'd still to this day say there's no way that they do what I do every day. I think they've both probably been in the milking parlour maybe once since in the 6 years since we've gone dairying. Yeah, so Brendan, my mother, we're living just down the field here from the main farmyard, so come on down and we'll have a cup of tea and chat.
Perfect.
grand. Thank you. I'm good. I'm good.
I was just saying, beautiful gardens and flowers.
Oh, you see, we had a wedding.
So it was all bells and whistles, was it?
The bells and the whistles.
Yeah,
yes.
You couldn't let the side down.
Oh, no. We treated him as if he was a bride. He was spoilt.
He'd be delighted to hear that.
I know.
Thanks for allowing me into your home, Irene. 16 years ago, your husband, Alan, passed away. And you were left with four small children. Well,
13 to 20. At a time, yeah. He was only sick for a year and a half.
Yeah.
So that's the time span we had to get the place. And we were sheep and sucklers then.
Had you discussed before he passed away that you've four children? How was this all going to work?
We have a very difficult farm here. It's extremely dry, challenging to farm. And I always said the farm here actually caused Alan's disease in the first place, the worry. And we always said, if the children don't want to farm, let it go. But Alan and Ashley would have had a few conversations about taking over the farm. Well, I saw the full circle here, how hard it was to farm for a man. And at that stage, I said we were shook. And Ashley was getting up. And at one stage, she had 250 sheep. We got rid of the cows in the end and we kept the sheep. But like she was going full and it was hard. And like you said, when she actually did her degree, I had a conversation. Ashley, would you not go and get a paid job, 9 to 5? Didn't we have that conversation? And Ashley kept saying, no, I want to farm. That's all I kept getting was, I want to farm. And I actually did have a conversation. I said, Ashley, I've missed so many things over the years because of the farm. I'm not going to be missing anything else because it's a 24-hour job, 7 days a week. Mm. And that's the conversation I had. But she knows all that. She was carrying books when she was only 4 or 5 in the yard. She grew up and she has the same passion for the farm as her father did.
I hate the word can't, and we've had that row so many times. And if there's no one, I'd call it a row, she'd call it a discussion. We'll be in the yard and a job needs to be done. And, you know, my mother will turn and she'll say, I can't do that. And I said, I just get, there's no such word as can't. It doesn't exist.
And Irene, can I go back to, you come from a farming background yourself.
Yes.
Was there ever any thought that you would take over a farm or that you would even think like that yourself?
Absolutely not. I had four older brothers and it was always the done thing that the older brother got the farm. That was the way it was back then. But no, I was never going to farm. It would never have been talked about. And I actually don't know anybody in my era, ladies, at that time that would have been farming.
No.
And the woman then wouldn't have farmed. If she got married, it would have been the husband would have taken over the farm and then, you know, she wouldn't have been farming herself. But that's the way it was back then. Me now looking at Ashley on the farm and what she has made of a very difficult farm. Proud doesn't even come close to it. She is brilliant. She has a brain that I would just admire from afar. But she has the love of the animals that her father has. And she is just magic. Very proud.
Oh, well, that was Ashley and her mother, Irene, talking to me on the family farm on the Carlow Kildare border. That's very debatable which county it's actually in. But I'm joined in studio now by Dr. Monica Gorman and on the line from Limerick by Ashley Meehan, agricultural solicitor, and Claire Hurling fan. Kind of a contradiction there completely. But Monica, you were listening to that report. And you know the way Ireland, everybody knows everybody else. You actually know Mum Irene and you were smiling away.
Yeah, Irene nursed my father when she was in Baldinglass Hospital.
Wow.
When he was in Baldinglass Hospital, yeah. So yeah. Her positivity, like, she still sounds like the same cheerful Irene.
Yeah, and what a wonderful job, what an amazing job that carers do at that time. So you know her in a different capacity.
Completely different capacity. And I remember actually when her husband was sick and, you know, we all knew she was going through a very difficult time, but she just stayed positive. And I suppose she's passed that to Ashley, obviously, as well.
There you go. You never know what's going to happen on this programme. But I was thinking about Ashley and I was thinking about her mum and I was thinking about being widowed with four children, kind of teenage years, so young. And Ashley, when should a farming family begin the conversation about succession? Is it ever actually too early?
Hi, good morning, Brenda. I just to clarify, I'm from Clare and then I'll be shouting for Clare later.
Yeah, no, I thought I made that clear. Sorry about that.
when it comes to Proud Clare Woman here, when it comes to succession planning, there's never too early a time in to my mind anyway. I suppose my own personal experiences, I come from a dairy farm, and when we were, you know, 14, 12, 14, 15, we were kind of sat down because we had a small farm, and my two older brothers were stone mad for farming. So it was a case of, you know, have we to grow this thing to try and create viable units for the next generation? And I suppose then from the other angle, I suppose I come across, as part of my job, I'm an agricultural solicitor, I come across families. And I suppose especially if things haven't been put into place, it's really important, you know, you structure your business to minimise stress on death. Like, a death can be such a stressful experience. So things like considering, you know, putting property into joint names, you know, forming a joint herd number and registering the farm set up as a partnership for tax. So that allows, you know, cash flow, because, you know, if bank accounts and herd numbers and all that were kind of shut down until probate was done, that can cause a lot of financial difficulty on farms. And then I suppose, you know, just touching on a point that you spoke with Ashley and Irene, it's really important to discuss, you know, your, like, with the spouse or a partner. I do a lot of work with Embrace Farm, and I'm dealing with, you know, widows or widowers where has been a sudden death, and they're kind of pulling their hair out to a certain extent, kind of wondering what would, you know, my late husband or partner or wife have done, you know, and they don't have that person there as a trusted advisor to bounce ideas off. So questions sort of should have, you know, would the deceased have been happy to for the farm to be leased until the kids were old enough to make up their mind? You know, should the farm be left to one child? Could be divided up amongst all the kids? And indeed, you know, could the farm be sold if there isn't any kind of, you know, successor as such that wants to take it on and farm it? So all those things, you know, it only takes an hour or two. That's what I always say to people that come into the office when they do a will, and, you know, it's an hour and they go, God, I'm so glad and relieved. That wasn't too bad. You know, it's so important to do it. It's so easy. A lot of the time it's just because people don't know what to do. But if it's just, if you just make, you know, make a plan or a will based on the here and now, and you can always change it.
And Aisling, do your clients who come in to talk about succession plans, do you find the family still consider boys to be the most likely successors, or are we seeing any kind of a gender shift there?
I do see a gender shift in that it's like, it's looking at who's the most capable or who is an interest in the farm. You know, I like, predominantly, you know, I have couples now where they don't have anyone that wants to farm full time. But even at that, I suppose, Brent, I'd see a shift that there's kind of a two-track farming set up now. You know, you have kind of low intensity farming. You have people that are working full time, maybe stressful jobs. They're looking at taking over the farm, farming less intensively, you know, and engaging more in, you know, environmental schemes and farm that way, kind of farming part-time. And then you have, we'll say, the, you know, maybe where the successor is farming full-time, and they might be farming more intensively because they're relying on the farm for an income. So there's kind of this, I think there's two paths emerging. And I find a lot of time now, you know, I'm getting a lot of people that into me because they're concerned about tax and changes to the tax regime. There's an agri-tax report that was issued about 2 years ago, and they're talking about tightening up the capital taxes. So I suppose there's a concern there that if there was a tightening up, or if you don't have an active farmer, will the same reliefs be available into the future? So, you know, as much as you'll have people that have kids that want to farm equally, you have people that don't have kids that want to farm, but they still want to look at doing succession planning during their lifetime as opposed to leaving it under a will.
And Monica, can we talk a little bit about the whole culture as opposed to the law? Because you were speaking at the Irish Rural History and Policy Conference recently, and you talked about this culture. So what is it about the culture that prevents girls in a family from being seen as possible successors?
Well, I suppose it starts early on in terms of whether or not you're encouraged to be interested in the farm from an early age. And, you know, we all have our kind of stereotypes and our biases, and they change slowly. So, and then if you're a teenager, like when you're a teenager, you want to fit in. So if you're hanging out with, you know, a whole lot of girls and none of them are thinking about farming, it's harder to kind of go against the grain. I think that whole thing of when you're a teenager, you want to fit in, you want to do what other people are doing. And if you haven't maybe got the encouragement at home to think about farming, you're not likely to have developed the interest. Whereas, you know, I think, and it comes across from Ashley there, obviously she loved being out on the farm with her father, even if he wasn't actually necessarily saying this is something that you should consider. And then, you know, the idea that farming is a tough life, you know, often out of a sense of care, parents would prefer their kids to do something that was easier, whereas it's better to be doing something that you love. So I suppose that going against the grain a little bit is not easy, and you don't necessarily get the encouragement. And, you know, there's still a lot of attitudes out there that it's about the boss man, or the, you know, is the boss around, is the, that the boss is a male, and that, you know, that's...
You're a great girl.
You're a great girl.
Well done. How do you lift that? Well, it's funny because actually we were talking about, you know, the equipment that she has, and she said that has allowed her do so much. Yeah. So you can't say anymore, well, you have to be strong or whatever. There's so many things to help. But Monica, for you, women successors are not entirely new because your own mother inherited a family farm. Is that correct?
She did. And, you know, at the time when her father died and she inherited the farm, but with the farm, she also inherited the care of her mother, her ailing grandmother, and a brother who was poorly as well. So it wasn't, you know, it came with a cost as well.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she later then met my father, who was working on rural electrification in the area, and they fell in love and they got married, and she made him her co-owner straight away, which is not something that always happens the other way around.
Yeah.
And I think what Aisling was talking there about, you know, the importance of having, you know, things in joint names, because one person can die. So, but I think, you know, my mother inherited, but my grandmother, my father's mother previously, you know, she was widowed young. She was widowed when she had one small child. But luckily her husband, this is back in the 1920s, had left a will. And she then went on and married my grandfather and brought him into that farm. So I think there's plenty of examples. It's just that they're not visible.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, you were discussing at that conference as well about the Succession Act of 1965 and how that changed. And just briefly, because it meant that surviving spouses had a right to inherit a portion of the deceased spouse's estate. And I'm just thinking, like, what it must have been like before that act.
Yeah. Well, the tradition, I think, was that, you know, that the wife, if the husband died, was left, you know, a room in the house and a seat in the car to mass. That was kind of the tradition, that she'd be kept, but not necessarily own or control anything. And, you know, at the time, I went back and looked at all the Dáil debates around the Succession Act, and there seemed to be general cross-party support for it because people were concerned about the plight of widows. Widows were very often left in very poor circumstances.
And there's a lot of work now, you know, jumping from that Succession Act to what's going on now on the issue of women and farming, including the Herself report being prepared under the Department of Agriculture. Now, Aisling, you're involved in work to clarify tax and legal issues that might make ownership by women much more straightforward. Can you tell me about that briefly?
Yeah, I can, of course. Thanks, Brenda. I was invited by the Department of Agriculture to be involved in a stakeholder group, and it's looking at legal and tax issues that are barriers to women owning farms and being farmers. I suppose at the way the tax system is set up at the moment, it kind of favours a farm being owned solely by, be it a son or a daughter. So we're kind of advocating for changes to the tax code to allow land to be transferred to maybe a son or a daughter and their spouse. And it just gives security to, you know, the non-owning spouse in the event that something were to happen to their partner. I suppose the benefit of the Succession Act is that, you know, it brought in a couple of things like the legal right share, and there's rules of intestacy, but that only applies in a debt situation. Whereas if the farm had been transferred before the will, well, then sometimes a spouse can be left very vulnerable. They don't really have any defined legal rights. So basically the farm could be transferred out from underneath them, and they wouldn't have any say, nor might they even be aware of it. So we're just really, it's trying to advocate for a choice, you know, in that. So there's a lot of great work being done.
Well, look, thank you both very much for coming in to me this morning on Countrywide. Dr. Monica Gorman, Associate Professor at UCD. Aisling Mean,
agricultural solicitor and a Clare hurling fan. Now, my husband's Kilkenny, so I'm kind of on the board. I'm on the, you know, I'm on the line here. But have a great day with your children heading up to the match. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in and discussing that topic. I know we'll definitely come back to it again on Countrywide.